Zendaya like you've never seen her before. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court. For more than a decade, she has former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor and Mike Feist, under her spell. It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules. See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com. Warning, things are about to get intense. Like when you stare into the eyes of someone that you really like for a full minute straight without blinking. Intense! Intense heat! Lasting plump! From the hot new Lifter Plump from Maybelline, New York. Formulated with chili pepper! Lifter Plump delivers a heated sensation for an instant lip plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades. Honestly, my favorite is hot honey and cocoa zing. I put it on my lips and honestly, it did sizzle them. It sizzled them right to the moon. They were plump and juicy and everyone was like, Nicole, can I? And I'm like, get in line. Can you take the heat? Find your shade at Maybelline.com or a retailer near you. Amazon shoppers get 10% off Lifter Plump purchase with code 10PLUMP for a limited time. Another episode of Why Won't You Date Me, a podcast where me and Nicole Byer used to try to figure out why I was still single, but I've done the podcast for so long and I haven't gotten the answers, so now I'm just trying to figure out what is love and why I don't have it. Okay, my guest today is an Emmy and Tony Award winning actor, writer, and comedian that you know from movies like Moulin Rouge, Encanto, Ice Age, the original Super Mario Brothers movie, Romeo and Juliet. Now he stars in Leguizamo Does America, a 6-part docu-series exploring Latin history on MSNBC. Ooh, I'm so excited to have John Leguizamo!
What's up? How you doing, Nicole?
I'm good. How are you? This is delightful.
Now that I'm talking to you, I feel better. I'm doing much better.
Thank you so much for doing this. Oh, I also forgot to say, you're in Too Long. Thanks for the memories, Julie Newmar, which is one of my favorite movies.
I do. I love that flick. And you know, a lot of teenagers,
it's so good.
Trans teenagers, LGBTQ teenagers come up to me and they go, thank you for the movie. It gave me the courage to come out to my parents and it made me feel, you know, beautiful about myself.
Oh, that's so sweet. But also, that's the power of you, John.
Oh, is it now?
It is. Okay, I have a question.
Oh, ask.
Are you married? Are you dating? Or are you like, don't want to say?
I'm married.
Oh, for how long?
Oh my God. We've been married for 20 years.
That's a long time. What is the secret to
In Hollywood
to, like...
years? In Hollywood years, that's 100.
It really is like 100,000 years in Hollywood time.
Yeah.
What is the secret to like a long, luscious, delicious marriage?
Well, there's a lot of secrets. There's a lot of it because, you know, You got to be in it for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
You got to enjoy fighting a little bit because you're going to fight. And if you enjoy that, then you're going to enjoy a lot of things. And you got to be best friends with your partner, your wife, your husband. You got to be best friends because, you know, love is love, but you need the friendship part. Otherwise, it doesn't last. I think the friendship is everything.
I think so, too, because you have to, like your partner. I have so many friends who I'm like, I don't think you like each other. Maybe you fuck good, but, like, I don't think fundamentally you like each other. Like, yeah. You want to go to a picnic or anything. You're like, uh-uh.
Right. And that's not enough. It's not enough because you gotta be able to hang and be together and go on trips. And we make sure we do all that stuff. We make sure we go everywhere and do things together because if you don't spend time together, you just... you know, naturally grow apart. I mean, that's the secret of growing apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just don't do shit together.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of great secrets for breaking up and ruining your relationship. I think we could, we got secrets for that too.
How did you guys meet?
Well, we met on a movie, Carlito's Way, back in the day. My wife was working in costumes. I was Benny Blanco from the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And she asked to be my personal dresser. And we met at the corner of 42nd and 9th Avenue, where near where I lived and where the costumer, we were going to do the costume fitting. And she showed up, and it was magic. It was electric.
Oh, that's so nice. And it's one of those stories that, like, I will never be able to recreate. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just like you meet and then you love each other and then it's magic.
Well, it wasn't love.
Know.
It wasn't love. I mean, you don't look at somebody and go, that's love. Although she says, my wife says she knew when she met me that first day that we were going to be together forever. I mean, I didn't feel that. I felt like, wow. I was like, wow, who is she? I got to know her. I got to be with her, you know. I felt those things. And then pretty soon when we started spending time together, I was like, wow, this is the most incredible person I've ever been with. I've never felt like this before. I never felt so, you know, safe and whole and cool and, you know, just a lot of things.
John, that is so sweet. I love that so much. Okay, so, like, when did you know you were in love? And, like, when did you say I love you?
Oh, she says, we argue about this. This is a part of the argument that I told you about. But she says that she was the first one to say, I love you. And I thought I mm-hmm. was the person to say, I love you. And when I said, I what I thought, my version is, I said, I love you. And she goes, thank you. And I went, oh, okay, you're welcome. And I was like, wait a minute. And she said, thank you for a long, long time till she finally, but she says it's the opposite. She said it to me in a parking lot somewhere and I didn't respond, that I acted like I didn't hear it. Maybe that's true because I don't remember that. So maybe I didn't hear it.
That would be funny if you you said it to her first, she didn't answer, and then she started saying, and then you started saying thank you, as like, it's just very funny. And it's like, somebody didn't say it, so I'm just gonna say thank you from now on.
Yeah thank you. Every time you hear somebody say I love you, thank you.
thank you so much, that's very kind of you, thank you for that.
Your kindness overwhelms me.
So wait, 20 years. So you've never been on like apps or anything. God bless.
Yeah, no, I never did. I never. Right. I was taken out of the app situation. But a lot of my friends do the apps and they tell me what are the best ones, what the crazy day. Yeah, it's pretty wild, the app situation.
Yeah, I hate it. I've been on them since they started and I still haven't found anyone. Okay, John, what advice would you have for someone who is single and looking and just not having a good time?
Wow, what would I tell? I mean, you got to hang out. I mean, isn't that that's the old school method? That's back. That's the analog method, where you went to bars, restaurants, as mm-hmm. many parties. You just made yourself present and available everywhere, because that maximizes your opportunities. So you had to like go to bars, yeah. You had to go to clubs, you had to just be everywhere and keep, you know, meeting and dating until the right person comes along, or, you know, and until you find the right person, it's a lot of fun too.
God, but that cuts into my couch time. I love being at home.
No, you can't do both. You can't look for love and be at home watching whatever you're watching.
I know, I got to get out there.
You got to go out there.
So what's a good thing to say to someone? Say, okay, I see somebody, I think they're cute. Like, how should I hit on them?
By not obviously hitting on them. Obviously, that was like the old guys, you know, I used to hear my friends, God, God, your hair is beautiful. God, you're beautiful. You know, you can't, mm-hmm. I can't be so obvious anymore. Or your hair smells great. You know, remember the perfume, the perfume lines, and you're like, those aren't allowed anymore. So I think you gotta talk about other things. I think you gotta just strike up a conversation, like depending where you're at, you know. If you're at a club, isn't that song banging? Isn't that cool? Mm-hmm. You know, talk about other things and just strike up conversation. Just keep that conversation going.
honestly, I don't think anyone's ever given me that advice. I feel like everyone's like, oh, you know, comment on their hair, whatever, da da da. But like a conversation where it's just like about nothing, because then they're just like, is she hitting on me?
Right.
I think so. I think she's into me. Ah, so you're saying trick them.
No, it's not trick. It's not about tricking. It's just you can't be obvious. But if you're talking mm-hmm. to somebody and trying to make a conversation, I mean, it's obvious. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's without being so, you know, corny or a dog or, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right. I think I could get into that. When did you propose to your wife? Do you remember your proposal?
Not really, but I'm going to make it up. Like, I'm going to act like I do. Yeah, I can't remember exactly how it happened. I wish I did. I know I spent a lot of time getting her the ring and all that, and I made sure I got her some. It was a beautiful antique ring from the early 1900s, and it was simple and pretty little diamonds, but nothing in platinum, something like almost Victorian. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what it was. But we had kids already, and so we had two kids, I think my oldest kid, my daughter was 3 years old by then, and my son was one, and I felt like I had to make an honest woman out of her. You know, be good for the kids, and it felt like it was the right thing. You know, I had been divorced right when I met my wife, so this is my second marriage.
Ooh, I want a second marriage. I want my first one too. I just want to collect gentlemen, and I think that's a fun thing. Are you
from
New York?
Nicole, do it. Yeah, I'm from New York. I'm from Jackson Heights. I'm Bridget, as my wife calls me, Bridget Tunnel.
Wait, Jackson Heights is Queens?
Queens, yeah.
Oh,
Queens
okay.
in the house.
Growing up in Queens, was it like easy to date, hard to date? Were you like the man in high school? That smile's telling me
I did
yes.
all right. Yeah. I mean, I was out on the street all the time. I was in the street. I was at all the dance, all the house parties. I was always everywhere. And so, yeah, I had a lot of opportunities and I dated a lot. Yeah. I started young. You know, I started when I was like, I guess 12.
12?
Yeah, because we used to have slam books. I don't know if it was
Yeah. We had slam books too. You like write shit about your friends and
right. And you go, you know, so I like her. What mm-hmm. Number five. Can we meet in the back classroom? Can we meet? Can you get a hall pass and I'll meet you outside? Yeah, we used to do all that until, you know, started making out and all that and other extracurriculars.
I love it. How scandalous. I didn't know guys had slam books. I thought that was like exclusively a preteen.
No. It was for the whole class. That's how you linked up with the girls.
Honestly.
The girls would start it. Yeah.
Very, very smart and a very organized system and like good.
You know, the ghetto has a lot of great things. Well, you got to be organized because you don't got anything else. I mean, what else you got? At least be organized.
I think you're honestly correct. When people have very little, they figure out a way to do shit and get shit done. And honestly, slam book. I think it's a good way to get shit done.
Oh yeah, you get done for real.
How did you get into acting?
Well, you know, I was a problem child, kind of always in trouble, and you know, my household was kind of a. There was a lot of domestic violence in my household, and my parents were immigrants, and they had so much pressure and PTSD from, you know, coming to a whole new country without any support group and all the pressure, all that. So, I lived for humor and comedy. Comedy was my everything. It was like it kept me sane. It kept me from getting beat up on the streets, And so I started doing a lot of, you know, I would make fun of people. I would do voices, characters. Mm-hmm. I did everything and everywhere. And so I became very popular and that flipped my whole world. But then I started becoming disruptive in the class because I loved the comedy too much, more mm-hmm. than the lessons. And school was my theater was like my captive audience. So I was looking forward to every day of school because now I had a big crowd. And the teachers didn't dig that. So one, my math teacher, Mrs. Zufa, said finally, you know, Mr. Squeezer, this was, and you know, if they can make penicillin out of moldy bread, they can make something out of you, Mr. Lesqueezamo. And then, you know, you, why don't you use your comedy for better purposes than disrupting the class? Why don't you take an acting class or become a comedian? And so I was like, yeah, maybe that's the thing. And so it finally struck me, and I was like, wow, maybe there is a thing. So back in those days, I went into Yellow Pages, and that's like Google today. Mm-hmm. And I found this acting school because it said Sylvia Lee Showcase Theater. And I said, showcase? Wow, that's for me. I deserve a showcase. So I showed up, and this little old lady in her tiny little apartment on 57th Street and 10th Avenue, as I used to talk, 10th Avenue. And I went in there, and I started taking acting class. She said my accent was abominable. She says, you can't understand a word you're saying. Your accent is so thick. And I did. I used to talk like that, like this, you know, that's how I talk. Like, I was like very kind of street hoodie kind of thing. So I was like, you know, that's how I talk like that. But now you can hear my...
Now I hear a true blue thespian.
There's a very well-rounded tones in my voice. I'm very, very articulate.
I like that a teacher was the one who was like, I see your talent. Do something with it. Because I feel like a lot of times teachers are like focused on like the academics of it all, or like shut up and be quiet. But it was just, it's nice to hear that someone was like, oh no, you are meant to do this. So I think you should. Like, I feel like more teachers should be more encouraging.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, teachers are such an important part of a kid's life. They're with you like, you know, like 10 hours a day, whatever it is in school. You know, teachers just need to get paid more. You know, that's they found it the secret weapon to making great schools and smart kids is put money into public schools. Put more money, you get more bang for your buck.
Yeah. So, okay, speaking of school, you went to Tisch.
Eventually, I went to Tisch because I was failing out of high school. So when I realized I had to apply for college because I didn't want to go to college, I just wanted to act. But I was a Latin guy, so it was like I had no opportunities. But my parents were like, you have to go to school. You can't live in this house until you go to college. So I was like, all right, I'll try. So when I started applying, no one would accept me because I had terrible grades, except one school, CW Post. And they took me. I guess it's the lowest rated, was the lowest graded college at the time in the Barron's book, which is fine with me. But I loved it. I loved it there, and I really changed my whole life there because these teachers were passionate. It was a boutique college. They really got turned on by what they were teaching, and I got turned on. And then I was like, I got so turned on. I was like, let me go to a better school. So I transferred.
You're like,
10
this whole education thing. I really like this. This is hot. Ooh, let me do it.
Let me do it somewhere else. NYU. So I went to NYU, Tisch School of the Arts. Yeah.
And then what was Tisch like? So were you the only Latin student in your class, or like was there other ones? It was just you.
I was always the only Latin person in my acting classes at CW Post, at NYU. Yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was wild because I mean, by the time I got to NYU, I mean, I was very idealistic and believed in meritocracy and that, you know, you worked hard and you got A's and talent would win out. But I started to realize that America doesn't really work like that. Because I was like, I'm in a class with these kids, you know, and you know, some of them are famous, Andrew McCarthy and D.B. Sweeney, and they're going to like I hear them talking about going to 5 auditions a day, every day. And I'm like going to 1 audition every 5 months. And for a drug dealer, a murderer, a killer, or some kind of subservient job, kind of at part. And then when I would look at the casting breakdown, you know, I don't know if you're aware, a casting breakdown is like what roles are available that are, you know, what movies are the casting? And it was like Jim Crow. It was like white actor, white doctor, white romantic lead, white. And then, you know, eventually it'd be like a Latin drug dealer, you know. And then you could ask, I would ask my agent, can I just do my monologue for them? Can I just audition? They wouldn't see you. They wouldn't even see you because I was a Latin dude. And I realized pretty quickly on that, wow, it's not going to be It's not a fair, it's not going to be a fair playing field, you know?
Yeah. So do you feel like you're successful in spite of and not because of? Like, did you have anyone championing for you, or was it like you grinding and grinding and grinding and being like, look at me, this is what I can do, I'm incredible?
Well, you know, I was, luckily I was in acting classes, and so that was fair, you know what I mean? Because I got to act and I could see, oh, wow, I had talent, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was basically, that's where I kept myself going, was in my acting class, because I could do the scenes, I could be in all kinds of plays and parts and could kill and rock. And then I knew, so that gave me the self-confidence. I mean, the only problem was that regardless if I had great talent, they weren't going to cast you. That was the problem. So then I pretty soon started going towards performance art spaces and comedy clubs, where it was more fair. You know what I mean? It was much more fair playing field, because it was about laughs, and you can measure that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And if you can measure laughs, then you get called back, and then you get moved to an earlier slot, and then you get a better playing slot. So that's how I started working my way up.
When you were like playing in clubs and stuff, did you ever run into chuckle fuckers, which is somebody who is chasing around comedians trying to fuck them?
No.
Really?
No, because I went there with my girlfriend mostly.
Oh, okay. The so they were like, all right, he's taken. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I saw a lot of chuckle fuckers from my girlfriend though.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, like Rodney Dangerfield started hitting her up, and I'm going, excuse me, I'm right here. Hello, you're spoken for.
That's wild. And then he's like, come on, can I get some respect?
Yeah, I can't get none around here. Hey, what's going on here?
God, that's so funny. What do you consider your like big break? What is the thing? So I know you had your television debut in Miami Vice, but do you think that's the thing that like started everything? Like, what do you consider your big break that you were like, oh, I'm so happy I got this?
Well, you know, the Miami Vice was important. I guess it was this student film. I did a student film at NYU that won the Spielberg Award and all these awards, and I was the second lead in it. And then that got me an agent, because, you know, it was impossible to get an agent back then.
Mm-hmm.
And the short got me an agent, and that got me Miami Vice. Miami was my first check so I could eat, because I was dying of hunger.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, I think I weighed 139 pounds, whatever. I was dying of hunger for real. And Miami Vice, you know, got me some cash, and that was, that gave me such a boost of confidence. But I think the thing that really changed my life was my first one-man show. When I did Mambo Mouth in 1990, all of a sudden, you know, that changed my life. I mean, I was getting offered TV shows. I was getting offered movies. I was getting offered a lot of things, small-time stuff. I got offered Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but I turned it down, because back then it was weird. You were taught from your acting classes that great actors didn't do TV. You did theater and
movies. Yeah.
There's Arthur Miller, one of the greatest playwrights, at my show.
Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And Al Pacino and John F. K. Jr. and Sam Shepard. I mean, it was incredible, because that's what the New York Times in New York, the power it had back in the day. Like, if you got a great review for a theater critic, you were made.
That's so cool. That's like, I don't know, it's like validation. You put a lot of work into something, and then someone sees and they're like, no, this is actually good and you should come see it. And then people listen and they come, and then magical things happen. Like, that's just, I like hearing when people work hard and then get a reward. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, that it, but because it doesn't always happen. There's lots of people who I know work really hard and are still struggling. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I was relentless. I was not going to take no for an answer from anybody. I was going to keep going no matter what. Somehow, I believed in myself strongly. I'm not sure where I got that self-confidence. I guess it was from my school and my neighborhood. I knew from the validation I got from the laughs from my friends that I had something, and that kept me going for years and years. And my friends from high school still take credit for it. They go, oh, we made you. That's why you're here. Because we boosted you. That's why your ass is over there, because of us.
I love when people are like, I did that. And it's like, did you? I'm the one who did the work. I'm the one who did it. Sure, you said a couple of things. I think the thing I really appreciate you is how vocal you are for the Latin community and representation and whatnot, because it's still not where it needs to be. And there's a lot of Latin people in the United States. There's also a lot of Black people, and that representation's not where it needs to be. It's truly wild. I mean, clearly it's better than it was like when you were starting out, but it's still not where it needs to be. And I don't know how you fix that.
Yeah, but the fix is the trickier part. But I think you got to be vocal. You got to constantly you got to be a pain in the ass. I mean, you can't stop demanding representation, fair representation. And you got to come up with different ways to annoy them. And that's what I do. That's what I do. I'm not going to shut up until we have 20% representation in front of the camera, behind the camera, corporate-wise, executive-wise. I'm just not going to shut up because I feel like I'm fighting for this movement, and I feel like it's taking on it's getting some heat in it, and we're getting more organized, and we're getting better organized. You know, we're fighting for a Latino museum in the mall. And we got through Congress and the Senate, and then some Republicans won't let us be on the mall. They want us to be like miles away. Like, you know, I was like, we're not going to have a museum miles away, because then it's like, what's the point? Nobody's going to go.
What's the point? Yeah.
We got to be on the mall. So we're fighting that, you know. So I think it's taking out, this whole movement is getting steam. I got Sol Trujillo, this great millionaire activist. He's getting all the Latin data and holding corporations to, like, you said you were going to have increased representation in your corporate board, but you didn't increase it by any percentage this year.
I think that's great. Like, somebody has to do it. And I'm glad that you are doing the work, because it is important. Representation matters. Like, I remember coming up, and like Queen Latifah on Living Single was very inspirational to me. I was like, this woman looks a little bit like me. Whoopi Goldberg looks like me. And I was like, oh, so like things are possible and I can do shit.
Yep. Because that's a signal. That's a signal that you get. I mean, Plato said it. He said, he who controls the storytelling controls society. And if you're not part of the storytelling, how are you going to inspire the millions of Latin and Black kids out there? How are they going to see? Because not everybody's strong like us, like you and me, Nicole. They don't have that get up and go and get it no matter what the fuck.
Yeah, some people aren't born with the drive. Real quick, John, we have to take a break.
Okay.
One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel, the science-based language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Guess what? I love to travel. And honestly, traveling is better when you can speak the local language. So, ordering food, asking for directions, or just saying, me encanta papi. I think I said, I love you, daddy. Anyway, people just treat you better when you speak their language. Plus, it's nice not having to consult language apps while on vacation, because I'm having fun in the sun. Here's a special limited time deal for listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only from my listeners at babbel.com/date me. Get 55% off at babbel.com/date me. Spelled BABBEL.com/date me. Rules and restrictions may apply. Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake.
The right to control your body and get the healthcare everyone needs has been stolen. And now politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves healthcare. It's a human right. And that's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect your right to control your own body and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctors. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, you can help reclaim your rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future. And oh, we're back. Okay, I want to get back to love. What does love mean to you?
What does love mean to me? Love mean to me, well, a lot of hugging, kissing, smooching, cuddling. I love all that stuff. That's the stuff I love, you know. And then, able to be together, be able to be together and talk about stupid shit and enjoy the conversation and laugh. I mean, we laugh a lot, my wife and I. We crack each other up.
That I fucking love. All I want is to be in a relationship with someone who's like down to clown. Like if I want to moonwalk in a Target, like I don't want you to get mad at me. I want you to like fucking be like, hee hee. Like I want you to like have fun with me. Like that's, I think the basis of like a good relationship is like, do you make each other laugh? Y'all don't even know, like, you don't have to be funny people. It's just, do you make each other laugh? Like, do you bring joy out of each other?
And do you support each other's joy? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean, because like what you said, moonwalk into somewhere or jump into a water fountain or you know, do crazy things.
Yeah, meet me halfway. Be a little lunatic with me.
Right, right.
What do you think is the most romantic thing you and your wife have done?
Oh, wow. We've done some romantic. I think this past year, because I was away a lot, I felt like I owed her some kind of romantic excursion. So... we went to Rome and Paris because Paris is our favorite spot. And Rome, I was dying to figure out if I liked it or not. And and so we did, and we went, and we had a great, amazing time. We had an incredible time. We just, you know, every meal together, walking and taking in sights and laughing. We had a great time.
Ugh. I love that. Just going overseas to a beautiful country with the person you love. That sounds delightful. I've never been on like a vacation with a boyfriend or anything or a partner. And I think that would be really fun.
I think you're going to love it. I think right? because you're out of your element. You're both not, you know, stuck with your whatever jobs you're doing. You're not responding to emails and phone calls. You're disconnected. And now... you get to be you. You get to be all you, you know?
Yeah. John, so how do you balance work and having a relationship? Because you work a lot. So how do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, it was tricky when we had kids. I mean, because before we had kids, my wife would travel with me and we would go. So it was easy because she everywhere I went, she had friends everywhere and she'd hang out with all kinds of people and I'd get to hang out with her friends and it was a blast. And then when we had kids, it got tricky, especially because we were told by the school principal who was right. He said, every time you pull the kid out, you're giving them the message that school doesn't matter. And I was like, oh, damn, she's kind of right. I don't know those actor kids that drop out of school and all kinds of trouble and problems. So I was like, all right, we can't travel with the kids anymore because we were doing that. They were traveling. The whole family was traveling with me. And it was great for me, but I didn't want to wreck my kids. So, yeah. So then I had to stop taking as many movies. I had to, like, be more selective. Because I did love to work, but then I was like, I got to be there. I got to be a present dad because you know how Hollywood kids turn out because of neglect. You know, they just turn out bad and wrong. And I didn't want that. I really didn't want that.
I mean, that makes sense. And that is nice that you like recognize you're like, oh, I need to be more present. So that means working a little bit less.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's important. I think it's like you can work, but also make time for the things that are important in your life and which is your family.
Yeah. I mean, having kids for me was everything, you know, it was an honor that I got these kids and I wanted to really rise to the occasion because, you know, my father wasn't the best father in the world. So I feel like I had to make up for that.
Mm-hmm. You have two kids?
Two kids, yeah. a daughter and a son.
Okay, which one's your favorite? I'm kidding.
Yeah. I know you. You must be.
Can I ask, when you took to Wong Fu, was there, because I, what was that? That was like 94. So like, did you feel any hesitation with playing a drag queen in a movie in 94?
No, I didn't. I wonder if Wesley and Patrick did, but they didn't act like they did either, which was pretty incredible in back in 94, you know? I mean, I saw mine as an opportunity. I was like, I'm going to destroy this role. I'm gonna crush this motherfucker. This is my opportunity. I'm going to seize this sucker. And I did. I mean, I had this incredible drag queen friend that Laritza Dumont, who like gave me lines, taught me how to talk, do the whole thing. And I just usurped her personality and made it Chichi Rodriguez.
I love that. Little Latin boy in a dress. I think it's so funny that like now in 2023, I feel like it would be a big deal that like three straight men or whatever signed up to do a movie where they're playing drag queens. And I think that's wild.
You couldn't do that now. I don't think you could do that. We shouldn't do that now. I mean, if 2023.
No, I guess not.
You should have real drag queens playing
drag queens. But I will say it was fun to watch the three of you in drag as people that I was like, oh, never would have thought you would be in drag. I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was such a fun movie.
I loved it too. And obviously people loved it all around the world. I mean, because, you know, as I told you, like, I didn't realize that I had become an LGBTQ icon, as Chichi Rodriguez, and so it was impactful in a lot of ways. It's so interesting, you know, even though we were three straight guys, I think we did the characters with as much respect as we could, you know, and gave them dignity. And I think that's what people respond to. We weren't.
It wasn't a caricature, and you weren't making fun of anybody. Nobody
or putting anybody down. Yeah,
I feel like that movie's a good example when people are like, "Kids shouldn't see drag things." I'm like, I don't know. This movie's about drag queens, and it's like pretty wholesome. It's like,
it's incredibly wholesome.
Drag queens who like clean up a town, and it's like nice and empower a woman
problems.
Who's being abused. Yeah, it's like just it's a nice story. When you did Romeo and Juliet, had you done Shakespeare before?
I had wrecked Shakespeare before, but I had done it incorrectly, but I had done it. I had done with Joe Morton and I had done it at the Public Theater. I had done Puck in Midsummer Night's Dream, and I was terrible.
I was terrible
because I was method, and I was like trying to put method into Shakespeare, and I was playing practical tricks on everybody, being really annoying. I put itching powder in their underwear.
John!
And I got reported to Equity and fined. Yeah, I was not easy to be around.
God, that's really funny. Just a mischievous little puck putting itching powder in the underwear.
I thought it was funny.
I mean, I do think it's funny. Would I think it's funny if I put on my underwear and I was like, the fuck? I wouldn't think that was very funny. I'd be like, okay, we got to get rid of this person.
For real.
God, that's so funny. That movie is so well done, specifically because I think that movie came out, I was still in school. And
96, 97?
Yeah. I hadn't really been exposed to Shakespeare at that point. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, it makes sense. And then I started reading it and it made a little less sense. And then I was like, oh. And then someone was like, Shakespeare is meant to be watched. It's not meant to be read. Yeah. So then I started reading it out loud when I would read it. And that was so helpful. But yeah, Shakespeare is so, it's just pretty. It's pretty to listen to. And then the stories are tragic.
Great. He had some magic. I mean, he didn't know what he was doing. I mean, but I agree. I'm like you. It took me forever to like, Shakespeare, and I think it was a Zeffirelli Romeo and Juliet. I mean, I guess the most accessible for young people because it's romance and love till you're dead. You know, basically, everybody dies. and they're also the shorter versions. You know, Baz Luhrmann's is like reduced. You know, it's like short attention span Shakespeare.
I mean,
That's just kind of how I want to see it. One of my favorite adaptations is She's the Man. It's essentially Twelfth
Night. Oh, yeah.
It's so funny.
And Breaking Bad is Macbeth. And Lion King is Hamlet. I mean, come on. They're really important stories to borrow and use for other
mediums. Yeah, to borrow, use, you know, dip in, dip out. Just be like, yeah, a little hint of hammy here. What is something that, like, you want, like, what is, like, an acting goal? Like, what is something you want to do next?
I want to do some Broadway, like in real plays. Not real plays. My plays were real too, but you know, with an ensemble cast or the cast.
Not one man shows. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not one man shows. I want to do I want to spread the work around.
What play? What is your ultimate play to do? Mine's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, and I got to get old to be Martha.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, yeah.
I want to play Martha so bad. But
I'd
like,
love to see you as Martha.
Got
to
age 20, 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. You got to get a little life experience in you. I love Long Day's Journey Tonight. I love Speed the Plow by David Mamet. Mm-hmm. I like anything by David Mamet.
Mamet's great.
Yeah, some Sam Shepard I like to do. I like the edgier stuff.
I'm here for it. I want to see it. From your lips to God's ears.
Here we go.
We have to take just another break.
All righty.
Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service that's all about helping you have fun and get creative with your style. Shift gears in your wardrobe without a complete and expensive overhaul. Dressy stuff, trendy going out clothes, casual tops and premium jeans, sweaters, outerwear, vacation fits, you name it. For just $98 a month, you get a choice of any 6 styles each month. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands with inclusive sizing, fast, free shipping and returns, and professional cleaning in Nuuly's state-of-the-art laundering facility, plus the option to buy what you love. I like Nuuly a lot because sometimes I don't want to like own a sparkly thing because I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to wear it more than once. Also, I have a ton of sparkly things. And Nuuly is very good at like having a sparkly thing that I'll wear once and then I can send it right back. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any 6 styles. But right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code DATEME20. Just go to Nuuly.com, Nuuly.com. That's Nuuly with 2 U's, and enter the code DATEME20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's Nuuly.com. Nuuly with 2 U's with code DATEME20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes. Wow! Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably with brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak on 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store and learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. We're back. Okay, so the advice, we gotta get back to love. It's a love podcast.
Okay, bud, yeah. Come on, what are you doing? We're talking
so,
about-
Well, I am a very big fan of yours, and I'm so interested about your career because it's just, it spans so many different genres, and like The Menu was so good. You were so good in that. And
thank you.
A nuanced performance, but you were doing so much and so little at the same time. It was great. Anyway, so the advice you gave me is to get out of my house to meet somebody. What other advice do you have?
What other advice? Be friendly.
Okay.
I think just being friendly is like a sexual magnet. I think it's like an aphrodisiac. You know, I think it works. I mean, I was always like hyper friendly and to, you know, and people come to you.
All right. Just be friendly. These are all
super friendly. Like, you know, to everyone, because you never know where the magic's going to happen.
You're right. I like this advice. Just like go out and be nice.
Yeah. Right. How novel. How unique.
It seems easy enough. Okay, I think I can do that. Be nice. Don't hit on people. Go out. Okay.
Because it takes the pressure off of you, too. I mean, if you're going, I got to score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got... I got to take some home when I go. It's gonna be a pressurized situation.
You're right. Are your kids of dating age? Are they dating right now?
Oh yeah, my kids are dating. Yeah, they're both in love.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh my. Did they take your advice? Were they just nice and out there?
Yeah. But you know, it's interesting because I told my daughter. I said, you know, I was like, I don't know. I guess I was saying the opposite thing that people used to say back in the day. Like, a man does not complete you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't need a man to make you whole. You know, it was just different advice. You know, I think my daughter takes it. She very much owns herself and, you know,
mm-hmm.
doesn't need a man. And then when, you know, a man comes to her life and she's in love, it's a whole different thing.
I think that's even better advice. You don't need a man.
Right,
and I
right.
fundamentally understand that, but I'm like, I just want one.
I don't need one. I just want one.
I just want one real bad, please. tell me a little bit about Leguizamo Does America.
Oh, all right. So I pitched this for 6 years
mm-hmm.
and nobody got it until a Latin executive, Cesar Conde, the chair of NBC, and Rashida Jones, the first black executive at NBC. We pitched them. They loved it, greenlit it, and gave us the opportunity. And I go around America to the cities that I used to go on my Latin comedy tour. We used to call it mm-hmm. the Arroz con Pollo comedy circuit.
I know pollo is chicken?
Yeah, rice and chicken. Rice and chicken.
Okay.
The Rice and Chicken Comedy Circuit, which is 20 big cities across America that are really big and super huge Latin populations. And so we started with the first 6 cities, and I go looking for Latin excellence and Latin exceptionalism and, writers, painters, politicians, activists. And we sit down, we drink, we laugh, we eat delicious Latin food, and we dance.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. Also, wild that you had to pitch that for 6 years, and it only came to fruition when there was a Latin executive who was like, oh, I see the vision, I get it.
Right.
I think that's why it's so important that, like, I think the only way change will happen is if change happens at the top and the people
yep.
making decisions look like the people who are pitching them things. Because otherwise, it's like... they don't get it. And then they're just like, no, let's pass. And it's like, yeah, but you're passing on something that might be really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we Latin people and black people win where there are metrics, like in sports, you know, like Latin people, we're killing it in baseball because you got mm-hmm. stats. We're killing it in music. I mean, Latin music is the biggest thing mm-hmm. in the world again for the 50th time in this 100 years. But it's because you have scans and you can measure that. Where mm-hmm. where it's up to an executive's taste and opinion, that's when we lose. Because how do I download a guy in 20 minutes about our 500 years of history in America? How do mm-hmm. I download you about, you know, that we discovered America, that we've been here, we didn't just get it, we've been here for 500 years, you know, we built this country just like black people and in a different way, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And we're oppressed. And we still contribute hugely to America. How do I do that in 20 minutes? You can't. And so unless the executives look like us, we're not going to see the progress that we deserve. And that's where I want the change to happen the most now is I want 20%. We're Latin people at 20% of the population, almost 20% of the population. I want 20% of the executives. That's what I'm after now.
It's a good goal because it makes sense. It's interesting because like sometimes you'll get a note on a script and you're like, you just don't get it because you don't see the point of view that I'm trying to show you. And then like sometimes on set, you'll like say a joke and then a white exec will be like, I don't quite get it. Can we get an alt on it? And it's like, no, I'll explain to you why it's funny. And then it's just like you have to take time out of your day to do that.
And then when you explain a joke, you know it's no longer funny. You know what I mean? Anytime you have to have a footnote to a joke, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's game over. I mean, look at Encanto. You look at Encanto and you go, why did Encanto work? Because we had a Latin writer, a Latin director. Mm-hmm. Lin-Manuel Miranda was heading the whole project. They did mad research. So it works because it's specific, insecure. Mm-hmm. Why did it work? Because she wrote it and they let her do what she needed to do. And mm-hmm. It was specific and real, and anybody could connect to that.
And an interesting thing about the specificity is because, like, I watched Encanto and I was like, I love it. I don't see myself represented, but, like, I love it. It's a very accessible story and it was effective. And that's, like, another thing. It's like, just because it's, like, not people who look exactly like you doesn't mean that it's not going to resonate with everybody
else. Right. Because, look, we've been watching white stories forever and and it resonated with us.
Yeah.
And we don't get it. We don't understand the culture.
I'm not mad about it.
No, either. It works the other way around, too. It just does.
Yeah. Okay, I also want to ask you about another movie that I love that you're in, Moulin Rouge, another Baz Luhrmann joint. So had you done musicals before? Because you sing in that, right?
I do, a little bit.
Yes. Have you done, like, musical theater at all or singing?
No. I got an amazing voice, an incredible voice, but I can't remember a melody or hit a pitch. But other than that, I have an amazing voice. An incredible singing voice. Baz wanted me for the unconscious Argentinian, and I was like, unconscious? Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in a role that's unconscious. Why would I want to do that? If I want to be unconscious, I'll stay home and drink all weekend. Yeah. But I wanted Toulouse-Lautrec, but he had offered it to Rowan Atkinson, so I had to prove to him in a four-hour audition in a hotel.
Four hours?
Yeah, I had to, like, prove that I could do my British accent of some sort. And then, play it sort of comical and yet totally believable. And so it was quite difficult to prove it, but I did. And I got the part. Probably because Ron probably turned it down, but I got it anyway.
But a four-hour audition, damn, that's a marathon.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I was like, no, boy. I was like, I can't do it anymore. Maybe I don't want the part anymore.
Yeah, I don't want this. At hour three, I'd be like, you know what? Give it to her. I'll go to sleep. I'll be the unconscious Argentinian. Let me just sleep.
For real.
Uh-huh. So, John, we've come to the end.
Oh, wow. Already?
Already? I'm so sorry. I ask all of my guests this. Would you date me?
Let me ask my wife.
Honestly, good answer. Is there anything that you want to promote?
Yeah, The Power. I love The Power. The Power, this incredible series. It was a number one novel around the world, speculative fiction. So basically, the short story is girls, through evolution, develop this organ to protect them from violence, protect them mm-hmm. from aggro men, patriarchy, and this organ comes at puberty. And it becomes an electric charge. Some girls can control it to a static charge. Some girls can give out a nuclear blast. And and people start getting afraid, especially men. So they start rounding them up and they escape and they start taking over the world and women take over the planet.
Oh, that's on Amazon?
Yeah, it's on Amazon. I think we're on episode 6 this week.
Okay. There's, I think, 9 episodes. I'm going to get into it. That sounds very good.
Oh, you're going to love it. If you don't love it, call me up and ask me for your money back. I'll give it back.
Give me back my Amazon Prime money.
All right, Nicole, here it is. You want it in Venmo or PayPal?
John, thank you so much for being here. I really do appreciate it. I know you're very busy, so thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. It was a blast. Anytime.
All right. Thank you. If you like this episode of Why Won't You Date Me, you can like it, you can rate it, you could, give me a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever. But if you write me something nasty hitting on me, I will read it. And you just send it to whywon'tyoudatemepodcast@gmail.com. This nice person said, Nicole, I want someone to take you on the most romantic date where you joyfully talk about amazing shows you've guest starred on together. I want him to take you home, pull out his huge cock, either on his own or one that he brought, and fuck you till he screams, I'm nailing it. Afterwards, he will propose to you because you have a fat ass and you will live happily ever after. Don't ask me why, but I think this will be very good. So that is a nasty thing that somebody said.
Wow, that's nasty. But I'm glad you read it out loud. I'm glad you didn't keep it to yourself.
No, gotta read them out loud for the people to hear. All right, thank you, John. Bye-bye.
John, peace.
That's it for Why Won't You Date Me with me, Nicole Byer. Why Won't You Date Me is produced and engineered by
Oh, the sweetest woman I know, Marissa Melnick. It is executive produced by other wonderful people, Adam Sachs, Joanna Solotaroff, and Jeff Ross. Thanks for listening. I love you. Thank you so much. We'll be seeing you next Friday with a brand new episode. What a treat. What a dream.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.